We will get to the agency testimony last. A little housekeeping. You may notice that I have a different CLA today. Our former CLA just disappeared, but we do have a new researcher. Her name is Chelsea Axelson. She looks a lot like Chelsea Peter. In fact, they could be twins. The truth is, Chelsea got married over the summer, and she has moved from CLA up to research, and we're happy, very happy that she could stay with working with our committee. And she got some good training last year, so I know she's going to do a good job. Secondly, then, we have Sam Moyer here, who is our new CLA. He's from Zumbro Falls, a Mankato State graduate in political science, third year on the staff of the House. And finally, we have our page. Joe Davey is going to be our page for this session. He is from Eagan, graduate of Metropolitan State in the criminal justice area. So welcome aboard, staff. We're glad you're with us, and we will have a great year, I'm thinking. We have some minutes to approve. Representative Johnson, are you here? Oh, there he is, way in the back. Would you like to make a motion?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the minutes both for March 29th and September 11th.
Thank you for that motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. Thank you. So today we are focused on MNLARS. I think it's appropriate that we do a little history to prepare ourselves for the testimony that's going to come before us. But first, let me just say one very important thing, and that is that the citizens of Minnesota deserve to get the services they have paid for. It's unconscionable that they're not getting what they deserve, and we are going to do everything we can to move forward and make sure that the citizens of this state and the businesses that operate in this arena, being they deputy registrars or auto dealers, get what they deserve, too. This has been difficult and challenging. It's going to be a challenging hearing today, but I assure you we are most interested in getting this thing to move forward. I have to do a little bit of history, mostly because there's this new request for significant additional funding, and it's just not appropriate to start throwing more money at this until we understand better what's happened up to this point. I'm just going to review a little bit of the timeline so that all of you kind of have your memories tweaked a little bit. This started, of course, last session, but after last session, when we had the delayed date for the rollout of July 24th, I had the opportunity to go downtown to the offices where they were getting ready for the rollout. I went to a large room that had lots of TV screens and lots of people and lots of laptops, and they assured me that they were ready to roll out this system. As you all know, that rollout has not gone well. On July 24th, we sent a letter to the governor informing him that we were getting lots of calls already, even just 3 days after the rollout had occurred, that things were not working well. I got no formal response from the governor to that letter. On August 1st, I was on vacation, actually, up in northern Minnesota. I called the governor's office directly to try and inspire them to move, to take this very seriously and move forward. No action. August 10th, we had a conference call, continued denial that there was a problem. September 11th, we had a hearing of this committee, went through many of the issues that we're going to still hear about today. September 18th, I sent a second letter to the governor as a result of the hearing we had on the 11th. Again, no formal response from the governor. On September 25th, Representative Baker's committee had a hearing in Willmar, Minnesota. The governor told the people in his administration that they could not attend the hearing. He wouldn't let him even come to testify. We had one person testify that they had gotten a transaction where they had processed this renewal, and the bill came up to $50, where it should have been about $500. And they were instructed by the staff from the administration to tell the customer that it was his lucky day. His lucky day. That's great responsibility. On October 17th, the governor had a press conference. A little clip from that press conference is going to be in the video you're going to hear shortly, so I'm going to stop the timeline here, and we're going to play a video from a Channel 9 broadcast of last week.
When the state rolled out a new $93 million vehicle licensing and registration system last summer called...
By the way, I love technology.
It immediately backfired. Long lines, it took months to get plates, car dealers couldn't sell inventory. And now the Dayton administration says the new computer system, which was 8 years in the making, needs a huge $43 million fix. But more surprising are the secret recordings given to the Fox 9 investigators. They show the governor's office was notified 3 years ago that the project was headed for a cliff.
Milars determines what you'll pay for new license tabs.
It's ridiculous what it is.
And how much tax is owed on the sale of a car.
It is a man-made disaster.
It replaced the 35-year-old system for licensing and registering all things on wheels.
The stress level that everyone dealing with this has just been off the roof.
With $1 billion of revenue to collect every year, it's critical for Milars to get the numbers right.
There's so many things wrong with it.
But millions of records that were transferred from the old computer system to the new one may not have accurate information about the vehicles and their owners.
I would say 8 out of 10 don't.
8 out of 10?
There's something wrong. Yep.
Deputy Registrar Gay Smith did a little experiment and used Milars to calculate the tax on 5,000 new same-model SUVs. She discovered a system flaw that's likely costing the state millions in lost revenue.
In the first year alone, we lost $1 million plus.
Just on those 5,000 vehicles?
Just on those 5,000 vehicles.
The state says it currently has some 16,000 revenue discrepancies under review. Turns out Milars also can't process the transfer of personalized plates from one car to another.
All I know is it was really terrifying for me. Terrifying.
Dawn Morningstar was busted by police.
They came up and they said, hands on dash.
Because they thought she was driving a stolen car. Actually, her plates had just been moved from an old lease to a new one.
It makes me wonder why this wasn't planned out better.
And now the Dayton administration wants another $43 million of your tax dollars to fix all the problems. It's not a surprise to this man.
It was off the wheels at the time I was working there as of June 2015. And
Bob Helland was a Milars business process analyst. He's one of several insiders, including some with critical roles, who spoke with the Fox 9 investigators about what was going on behind the scenes. Picture the beginning of this project like an old car in need of a total rebuild. In 2012, DVS, the state's Driver and Vehicle Services Division, first hired Hewlett-Packard to overhaul its antiquated computer system. By 2014, an audit showed the project was misfiring from a culture of distrust and negative undercurrents. After spending $16 million, DVS slammed the door on HP and brought in MINIT, the state's Information Technology Department, to look under the hood. MINIT gave some of the development work to its own state employees who make about $50 an hour. But it also hired four times as many outside consultants and paid some of them over $300 an hour. A former manager told us some of the rates were outrageous, irresponsible spending of taxpayer dollars.
it was important for me to let them know the severity of the problems that I saw.
Helens and other insiders say some consultants were given too much authority to run things, creating a potential conflict of interest to create more work for themselves. They say people in key decision-making roles didn't understand the business of licensing and registration. Plans to test and catch software defects were woefully inadequate. They say they warned both DVS and Minute Management the project was in danger of becoming a public and political spectacle.
Hey, someone really needs to look at MinLars.
Helen says his concerns fell on deaf ears. So in March of 2015, he went straight to the governor's office.
I'm here to see Jamie.
He met with Jamie Tincher, the governor's chief of staff at the time.
But there's very little confidence in DVS management.
He secretly recorded their nearly hour-long conversation.
This was just kind of a last straw to me to say that there's no truth in the public about this project, and we don't have any truth internally, so I felt compelled to let you guys know.
Tincher seems interested in what Helen has to say.
I would like to look into this. I want to do some outreach.
She says she's going to talk with Tom Baden, the commissioner of Minute.
So I'd kind of like to get a sense from him and just ask him to really dig in and come back to us with, you know, what does he think is going on, what is happening there, and try to dig into that.
Baden, who this month took early retirement, tells the Fox 9 investigators he does not remember ever getting a call from Tincher about this.
To the best of my recollection, I did not have that conversation.
Tincher, who now serves as deputy mayor of St. Paul, told us she can't recall ever meeting with Bob Helland or what they discussed. And a spokesman for Governor Dayton says the governor doesn't remember anybody on his staff bringing Helland's concerns to his attention back in 2015. After MinLars' tumultuous rollout last summer, Dayton was quick to say things weren't as bad as critics were making it sound.
Once again, Republican legislators are just delighted to jump on something if they think they can do damage to the credibility of state government, especially with a Democratic governor.
Then came a series of legislative hearings in the fall and this winter to get to the bottom of what went wrong.
They didn't seek input from stakeholders, from people who use the system.
In a statement to the Fox 9 investigators, Minute acknowledges many individuals voiced their concerns about this project, and we regret that they feel they went unheard.
Had I known what I know now, I wouldn't have released it at the time.
But it's what former Minute Commissioner Baden said in November, when there were no cameras around, that stunned State Representative Jim Nash.
Did someone along the line know that this was not ready to go live and yet said go live? And he took a pause and he said yes.
Nash says Baden told him that Paul Meekin, the manager in charge of MinLars, knew that it wasn't ready but advocated for it to go live anyway. Baden hedged when we asked him about it.
Is he giving me an honest recollection of what was said?
I have no reason to doubt Representative Nash is an honorable guy, but I don't recall making that statement.
Could you have made it?
Possibly. You know, we were having a pretty open and candid conversation.
Paul Meekin is currently on leave.
I'd like to ask you a couple of questions about MinLars.
We told Meekin about the conversation between Nash and Baden and that allegations had been made that he approved the release of MinLars knowing it wasn't ready.
I think you should talk to communications, and we can talk through them.
Okay.
I'm an employee of the state. You understand, right?
Yeah.
If I spoke to you without talking to them, I'd get fired instantly.
Okay.
So we contacted Minute Communications. They did not address our question about Meekin's role in the decision to go live with MinLars, but they did say the system was released too early without all the features needed by our stakeholders.
The road ahead is not going to be easy.
The state agencies responsible for this massive project admit leadership did not pay attention to staff who tried to blow the whistle on the problems.
Were not really listened to and they were disregarded.
Bob Helland says DVS, Minute, the governor's office, and the legislature all had reason to know MinLars was headed for mayhem.
They all have a part to play in this, and they've all fallen asleep on the job, really.
I'm Fox 9 investigator Jeff Ballion.
The legislature is back in session on Tuesday, and that extra funding for MinLars is going to be one of the first things on the agenda for lawmakers. And some are saying it's not by any means a done deal.
Well, a governor may think I'm delighted, but I can assure you I'm not delighted. I would much rather be looking forward to successes rather than looking backward at failure, but we really have no choice. As late as October 27th, the governor was indicating that things were still fine, and he made no mention of the FAST contract. And finally, 3.5 months after the rollout, the governor did acknowledge that there was a problem and revealed ongoing negotiations with the FAST company to do the driver's license side of MNLARS. I had a meeting with Commissioner Baden, commissioner at the time, on November 17th, and he also indicated that they were going to sign, or were about to sign, I believe, a contract with FAST. January 4th, the Senate had a hearing, and that was where I was first understood that this creation of a new system by FAST for the driver's license side of this would not communicate with our existing system that Minute is in charge of for tabs, titles, and license plates. To me, that's a real problem and one we had no idea was coming. Finally, on January 31st, we were suddenly informed that there was a need for $43 million. No indication prior to that that there was any shortfall whatsoever, any need for extra funds. And suddenly we had to add $43 million, and we had to do it the first week of session, according to the press release. This is not the way we should do business in Minnesota. I just had a press conference. We have a bill that I have authored that will authorize the governor to spend the $10 million, but we are requesting that he find it within the budgets of his administration. With that, we're going to move on and hear a little bit from the people that have been directly affected by this horrible rollout, and that is the first on the list is Amber Beckes. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Most definitely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Amber Backus, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association and its 374 franchise new car and truck dealers located here in the state of Minnesota. We do thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. But unfortunately, the MNLARS experience for our dealers is largely the same as when we presented before the House Select Committee on Technology in early November. And a recent survey of our members, 92% of respondents reported the system is working the same or worse as it was a month ago. Many title transactions are still in limbo as our dealers wait on key paperwork to be able to process them. While the backlog of titles appears to be easing, dealers are seeing many more errors in the titles being produced, with 60% reporting seeing more errors. Incorrect VIN numbers, vehicle descriptions, registration renewal dates, owner names, and lien holder names seem to be the most common errors. And trying to get the titles corrected restarts the wait-and-see process all over. The most positive development since the launch of MNLARS has been the effort to improve communication to the stakeholders and the assignment of Ms. Dana Bailey to oversee the project. She has been diligent about engaging the stakeholders and getting us to the table. We've been able to candidly discuss the system's failures and share how the users process motor vehicle transactions and what the system needs to incorporate that functionality. But it's too bad this exercise didn't occur when the MNLARS system was initially being developed. Under the most optimistic of timelines, it appears being able to conduct needed transactions, like transferring specialty plates, won't happen until the summer of this year. And the build-out of a number of other functions could take up to 2 years. In the meantime, steps forward in the system's development seem to continually result in some steps backward. The 111 release, which came out in mid-February and was designed to fix some of the most significant defects, has disrupted other transactions that were working. The ability to pay only the balance due on a vehicle's annual registration when buying a used vehicle is no longer available. Customers are being asked to repay tab fees for months that have already been paid in order for the vehicle registration to go forward. Transfer taxes are erroneously being applied to transactions for tax-exempt license plates, causing independent school districts to pay extra and wait for refunds when the defect is fixed. And whether the big fixes the 111 release was built to repair, like the ability for the state to process refunds, have yet to be realized for dealers and their customers, many of whom are still waiting for those. We do appreciate the extra effort the agencies are making to right the Mindler ship as quickly as possible and hope their efforts will translate into measurable improvements for our dealers and our customers. But for now, that outcome has yet to be realized. Anyway, thank you, sir, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. I had a question from Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the opportunity to sit in your committee. I've never been on transportation.
Remember, you're a guest, and we have limited time.
So, Ms. Backus, yes. We actually do have limited time. We've had presentations. I think letters have gone to leadership that we are out of time, that the contracts are up March 1st. So,
excuse me, Representative Hansen, we can't hear you.
Can you hear me? How about now? Ms. Backus, we are out of time, and I think the question is, what happens if the people who have been working on this are no longer working on it after Thursday? And you mentioned that there's an expectation for improvement, although that may take time. What happens if we don't receive the money? Now, I know we haven't heard from the agencies, but what are the consequences for the dealers if we mothball the progress and are unable to move forward because the dollars aren't there to execute a new contract?
Certainly, Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, our dealers really want to see a system that works, and if that entails having people on board to keep that process moving, let's get that done and make it work in the long term. But again, our dealers and just the folks on the ground have not had great confidence in what they've seen so far, but we're hoping we'll get there.
Very quickly, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Backus. If we had, like, weekly outcome meetings where we had public meetings looking at the progress, the same information that we may see is available to the public if the dollars are provided, would that provide some increased confidence, and I realize confidence is low, but would that provide some increased confidence if we bring this all out into a transparent thing with a $10 million request that would be approved?
Ms. Backus.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I do think that if those reports reflected what's happening on the ground and information was shared that was timely and accurate, that would be a big step forward, but many of our folks on the ground have been in the dark as some of these workarounds and patches have been released, and that hasn't helped move things forward.
Thank you. I do not see any other questions. We'll move on to Mark Kolda. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Mark Kolda. I'm the Vice President of Public Affairs for the Insurance Federation of Minnesota. The Insurance Federation is the nonprofit state trade association that represents insurers, including auto insurers. The auto insurance industry behind the deputy registrars and the auto dealers were probably the third largest actual users of the data. But there's a key difference in that while the registrars and the auto dealers are actually generators of the data, from the insurance industry's perspective, we're more users of the data. And we use the data in really two different ways. The first way is on the front end of the insurance transaction. So for insurance underwriting and processing the policies, we do use the data on that end. And from our members' perspective, we haven't heard many concerns about that part of the insurance transaction. The other half of the data that we use, though, is on the other end of the insurance transaction in claims processing, and that's where our members are indicating that they are having significant concerns with the way the system works. One of the issues when MnLARS was rolled out was that there was a change in the way that our members were paying for the actual data. We had what was called an escrow account. So insurers would fund an escrow account. They would, on a daily basis, use the data in large quantity, and then the payment would be made out of the escrow account. With the switch to MnLARS, though, they went to a cart transaction, which needs to be purchased with a credit card. And that becomes a problem for insurance companies when you have insurance company claims processors who may not necessarily have access to a company credit card. So in those cases, companies are falling back to the position of where company employees are using their personal credit cards then to pay for the data, and then have to ask for a reimbursement from the company, which now creates a bureaucratic nightmare of having to do claim processing the payments of all of the expense reports based on the use of the credit card. We also have a situation where companies that are processing claims have had a known defect, and that is that they have a cart transaction where sometimes the cart transaction will lock out and the companies will be locked out of the system. The way they've been remedying that is that the next business day, then they contact the department, either through email or phone call. The lockout is removed, but then there's a 24-hour waiting period until they can get back onto the system. So in day one, they get locked out. In day two, the lockout is undone, but they have to wait the 24 hours, so they can't conduct their claims processing until day three. So that becomes very inefficient, and policyholders definitely are concerned about that. The third problem that we've seen is that just the backlog in title printing. One of the situations is when you have an accident, and if your car is totaled, you do need to have access to your title so that we can process the claim. And without having access to the title, that then slows things down. As we know, there's a backlog of 100 days or so. Hopefully it's getting better. But in that time, a policyholder is not able to get the payment from their insurance policy. They may still have to make a payment to the lender and have additional form of transportation. If they don't have that insurance proceeds check, they have to not only keep paying for the car, but they have to find another form of transportation without money, without insurance proceeds. It really puts them in a difficult position. So we know that some of the fixes are in the works, particularly for the technical fixes. We know in watching the process since we've been involved with it, it has gotten at least it has gotten more priority, which is helpful. But our member companies are reporting that even though the fixes are in the works, they're still not reporting any significant difference in the system since it went live to now. So there is still some concern about that. And finally, just a little piece of, I guess, consumer news, consumer a point to make for consumers, just smart consumer advice. If you are a vehicle owner in Minnesota, it's very important to not only have your title, but store it in a safe place, because you never know we're going to need it. If you have an insurance claim, you might necessarily need it, and please keep it safe. So I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you for that advice, Mr. Kolda. Representative Hansen, if you're going to ask the same question over, I would just soon move on.
It's a different question, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oh, yeah.
So I understand the problems you're having, and those problems are, I think everyone around the table recognizes the ones that you're having. And have you, who are you communicating with the problem-solving team? How does that work?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, Minute and DPS have organized an executive steering committee of 20 or 25 people or so. They've been meeting regularly, and we, luckily at the Insurance Federation, have been granted a seat on that committee. And we've been communicating with them through this process. A lot of it was just the prioritization of all the flaws, 120 or so flaws. That was very helpful. But we've stayed in communication with them on that. Now, only part of our problems are technical. So our technical concerns are certainly addressed in that. There's another problem with it. If you remember, one of the first problems was the escrow crop problem. That's going to take a different solution. We look forward to working with the legislature perhaps to perhaps reauthorize the authority to have an escrow account and not have to use credit cards, for example. But that's something that's not a technical fix. That's going to have to be a policy fix, and we look forward to working with all of you on that.
Thank you. I don't see any other questions. We'll move on to the next testifier, Kelly Davison. Welcome to the testifier's table. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Kelly Davison, and I'm the owner of the Prairie Lake Deputy Registrar Office. Thank you for allowing me to speak. The new release that was done in February 111 was not a success for the deputy registrars or Minnesota citizens. Some transactions that worked in Minlars before the release no longer worked as they should, and another workaround has been created. For example, title transfers with registration in one process. This is a common occurrence with every update that is performed on the system. Things we were able to do previously no longer work, so they get added to the list of items needing to be fixed. When working in the system, we receive random errors. Cart status invalid when checking out cart. Cart still checks out. It just looks like it doesn't. Also, the website swirls for a long time and gives a search error, and we have to start the transaction over. Very time-consuming. The state has us fill out intake forms for just about any and all Minlar's problems. For example, glitches where transactions never made it to the cart. Many screenshots are taken to show and prove that it's stuck and the cart needs to be made. A very detailed intake form is completed explaining what happened and what needs to be done. We recently received an email from audit about all the transactions that needed carts since the launch of Minlar's, requesting details about all these carts that I already had submitted intake forms about, details like if the customer was given the registration stickers or a permit and if we collected money or not. These details were in the intake form previously submitted, such a waste of time. Also, rather than create a cart, they are going to delete these transactions so we can redo them. Wrong class on vehicle when migrated over from the old system, like a couple of street sweepers listed as Y trucks, big difference in registration fees. Also have one passenger class vehicle listed as a Y class and requiring a DOT. Broken records where you are unable to process any transaction due to blank pages or deficiencies are missing. We can't help the customer until who knows when. Daily email update said stop sending intakes on this issue. We had a dealer call about an update on titles from November 2nd, 17. The plate number, VIN, and vehicle info cannot be found on Minlar's at all. A record of the transaction through transaction IDs and cart IDs can be located, the only proof this vehicle was registered in Minlar's. When liaisons were called about it, my employee was told that there was nothing we can do and the state is aware of the problem from that date and time. What if the customer is stopped by law enforcement and no record comes up? Will they ever get a title? How about when they need to renew their tabs? I received an email back saying the issue with the 11-2-17 transaction is a known issue that is being worked on. We do not have an ETA on when they will be corrected, though. Large number of unusable plates. Minlar's will get plate and sticker numbers stuck on certain transactions, putting them on reserve, and we are unable to use them. So we have to grab a new plate and stickers and delete and restart the transaction all over again. And we're not able to reuse those plates or stickers, so all of us have quite a bit of inventory in our offices that are unusable. Large inventory problems that is rendered useless until fixed by the state. We are still unable to do many transactions for our citizens since Minlar's launch. Some of these transactions are to be mailed directly to vehicle services by the citizen with their checks. When the citizen, our customer, doesn't get any plates or stickers or title, they come back to our office for help. We have no way to tell them what is being done on their transaction or when to expect any results. If we call to see what the citizen should do, we are waiting on the phone for a minimum of 45 minutes to talk to somebody. While the customer is waiting, of course. Examples of those transactions are farm plates, conversions, change of class, out-of-state title, back in, with non-use, unmarked, and driver's ed. We cannot provide the public service our citizens expect and should be receiving. Inventory is hard to follow, and citizens are getting duplicate sets of year stickers in the mail after they receive stickers at the deputy office. There are sticker numbers showing to two different vehicles in the system. There are so many problems and no revenue received for all of these transactions in our efforts to provide answers and assistance to our citizens, our customers. It's a major problem that Minlar's is uneditable. We need correct information in the system. I'm concerned that the workarounds that are so time-consuming, adding additional steps that shouldn't be necessary to complete a transaction, will become a permanent part of how the system performs. As long as there is a way to get something into the system, I don't feel it's going to be prioritized in getting it to work properly. This is the third time the state is asking for $40 million. The citizens of Minnesota deserve nothing less than a titling and registration system that is accurate and working properly so we deputies can get back to the business of helping our customers. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Davidson, for your testimony. I had the opportunity to sit through a couple of hours of feedback at the Minnesota Department of Transportation office in Mankato, where largely deputy registrars and some folks work for the counties and auto dealers, And to be honest, I was thoroughly impressed with the professionalism in the room by the folks from my area, but also from the responses of the people in the state, where you folks came forward with really a lot of good, concrete suggestions. Some of them I understood. Some of them I understood less. But I heard commitments from the state to, it certainly appeared they were taking down your information and commitments to process that and work on that, on those suggestions. And so my question is, did that follow up? Was the state responsive in listening to the concerns and following up and trying to seek to remedy the situations that you folks had a lot of good suggestions on how to do that?
I feel that they're doing the best that they can do, but I feel like the system is such a mess that it's just not working the way they want it to. I don't feel, you know, I just don't have a lot of confidence in the system, to be honest. So,
a follow-up, President Johnson?
Well, I guess, yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess my follow-up would be more specific. I want to find out how responsive state government is to my neighbors who were there and really doing excellent citizen work, in my opinion. And were they responding? Were they responding beyond that meeting, and was there follow-up through the system to make those changes or work to make those changes that were really suggested in a wide range of topics in that meeting?
Yeah, we are getting emails from them stating what they're intending to do, and like this 111 that just came out. They are trying to fix the problems. I feel that they're doing the best that they can, but I still feel it's just not working. You know, they take one step forward and we end up two steps back. So now something else is working, but then two other things are now broken that we used to be able to do and we can't any longer because of this new update.
So. Thank you.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I want to also echo Representative Johnson's concerns and thank you. The deputy registrars have been on the front lines of this issue, and we really appreciate your work. What would happen, on Friday if there were some staff cuts, if money was not appropriated? I guess we're going to hear a little bit more about that and discuss it and even debate it later in this hearing, but where do you go on Friday if there aren't resources to, continue to address this problem?
Ms. Davison.
Sorry, I missed part of that. I'm sorry. I was signing it.
Representative Hornstein, I'm not sure we're asking the right people for them to know what's going to happen if the department cuts staff. Is virtually how can they know? All they know is that the system's not working today.
We don't want them to cut staff because we're already having a problem, with communications and getting a hold of them, asking, what to do on certain situations. So if they cut staff, it's going to be even worse. So
thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Davis, if I just have a quick question to get your insight. I'm familiar with the Elko, the deputy registrar. Is it true that they decided to close once the trouble started happening? And can you see that going through with other registrars of just throwing up their hands up? Is that true?
We are all of many, many of us are in dire straits right now because it's gone on for so long, and we aren't able to produce the amount of business we previously used to be able to do. We're wasting all this time on stuff that's not working and having to turn customers away. So, yeah, we're all of us deputy registrars are pretty much in dire straits here to get a system that's working so we can continue serving the public and getting these transactions done on behalf of the state. So yeah.
Follow-up, Representative Cousins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it also true or is it likely that private deputy registrars will be infusing more personal savings into their businesses to just stay afloat?
Yes. I've already heard that among several deputies, that we've heard mortgaging homes, using credit cards, doing whatever it takes to get the money in their office to stay open. So it's highly stressful for the deputies right now.
I have a question for you, Ms. Davison. What kind of service will the citizens of Minnesota get if you have to cut your staff?
Very scary question.
I'm sorry.
I'm a pretty large running office, and we have about 80 car dealerships that we process. So I'm not sure. I'm really not sure what would happen. And
thank you.
Don't want to even think about that.
I see no other questions. Thank you for your testimony today. Next up, we have Jason Seaman. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jason Seaman, and I work for Insurance Auto Auctions. Insurance Auto Auctions is a salvage auction company that handles the sale of total loss vehicles for the insurance industry. Thank you for the opportunity to testify again regarding the impact of the Minlar system on Insurance Auto Auctions. As you may recall from testimonies in November and January with the Senate committees, we handle the title work for vehicles that insurance companies come to own through the claim settlement process. Prior to the implementation of the new system, we received titles back from the DMV approximately 30 days after our submission of the paperwork. Since the implementation of the new system, that time span has increased to 100 days on average. Since the hearing on January 4th, we have experienced the following. The title turnaround is still around 100 days. We have received over the last 6 weeks roughly 2,000 titles. We still have over 3,500 titles waiting application and waiting processing at the state. This slowdown continues to have a negative impact on our business. Our vehicle sales have been reduced dramatically. This has produced overcrowding in our facility and disruption of our normal business practices to the detriment of our customers. As I mentioned before, the title slowdown also negatively impacts our insurance customers through the delay of the sale proceeds for the vehicles and through further depreciation of the vehicles as they sit in our facility. We estimate this added depreciation to be about $6,000 per day for the vehicles currently awaiting titles. Thank you for your time and attention to the matter.
I do not see any questions for you. Thank you for your testimony today. Next, I'm going to move on to our nonpartisan staff. We've been through this process. We've been trying to get some accurate numbers, and it's frankly been challenging. Mr. Lee has prepared some testimony for us today. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Andrew Lee from House Fiscal Staff. In front of you should be a one-page spreadsheet that looks like this. It's titled Minlar's Current Resources Budget, and then there's another column that says Minlar's Funding Request. So this spreadsheet was communicated to legislative staff shortly after the announcement of the approximately $43 million need for Minlars. And this breaks down in a little bit more detail kind of how they arrived at that number. So there's essentially two different scenarios that you're looking at when you see this spreadsheet. The first set of columns under Minlar's current resources budget assumes that no additional appropriation will come to the agency. And then the second column shows essentially what their ask is. So in the first column, you can see the first few lines are revenues that are resources that are available to the agency. And then on lines 8 through 15, shows the amounts that have already been spent that come from essentially other appropriations that are being, that resources are being redirected to pay for Minlar. So you can see contractors, minute staff, and some other items. And then on line 16 is the FAST contract. That's kind of the crucial piece of the initial $10 million request. Because you can see at the bottom of the current resources request, there's a balance of $10.986 million on line 30. That's what the agency and MMB would need to hold in the technology account in order to pay for the second year worth of the FAST contract, in order to get the driver's side of the system up and running to pay for that contract. Now, that doesn't pay for the entire FAST contract, and that assumes that a piece of the FAST contract of the payment for that contract is pushed out into fiscal 2020. So on line 16 under fiscal 2019, you see that 9.5, so that's only part of the remaining payment to FAST. And so that assumes that that $5.5 million can be pushed out to another fiscal year. So this current resources budget basically assumes a minimal level of staffing to fix problems with the vehicle size, so that's on lines 23 to 27. Then the request, the middle column, shows essentially backfilling some of the redirected funds from other appropriations that normally go to run the Department of Driver and Vehicle Services, and instead we're backfilling essentially what those appropriations would have paid for if they had not been redirected for MNLARS, and then also paying for, you can see the large amounts on lines 23 and 27, paying for technology costs and contractors to fix the vehicle side of the system. There's also another component of that, and that is on line 20 under the driver's side, the approximately $8 million in increase under the request is for additional DVS staff to implement the rollout of the driver's side of the system congruent to Real ID. So all of those amounts add up to, on line 30, the $42.8 million deficit figure, and that's commonly rounded up to the $43 million number. Now, just to kind of show that number in perspective, the driver and vehicle service funds, which are the fee revenue generated funds that go to pay for the operations of DVS, by the end of fiscal 19 would have about a $20 million balance. That would include about $15 million in their stated policy reserves and an additional about $5 million. So if you added all of that up, there's about $20 million available under current projections under the DVS funds. So if you were to put all of that $20 million towards the $42.8 million request, there would be a remaining need of about $22.78 million. In the box below that, I broke out some of the other components, some of the difference between the budget that would, what the agency would have to do absent any additional funding, and some of the other pieces, like if the payment to FAST could be pushed out to fiscal 2020, and if there wasn't additional staff for the rollout of Real ID. So those other costs add up to about $19 million. So absent those, then just the fix for the vehicle side with contracting and technology costs, and still assuming use of other appropriations from driver and vehicle services, would bring the cost to about $23.68 million. And if you then applied the complete balance of the driver and vehicle services funds, that would bring you to a remainder of $3.6 million. And one thing I should very briefly touch on is that this does not address any of the issues that the agency is identifying as costs in the tail. So those are the last two columns on the far right-hand side of the sheet.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Lee, so if there was an urgency and we needed to provide $10 million for continuing the work that's being done on MNLARS, we would also have enough to make, or at least to start responding to the deputy registrars. I think both Representative Baker and I have bills that are trying to find some way. We had the testimony that there is the potential for shortfall and closing of services there. So if we started with a $2 million reimbursement for the deputy registrars, there's enough money there plus the $10 million if we could move quickly. Is that correct?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, so it all depends on how much of the request that the legislature would want to fund in terms of the immediate $10 million request from DVS or the more expansive fixes. But essentially that $20 million, because it is not tied down in the Constitution can be spent on whatever the legislature would like to appropriate it on.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. I do not see any other questions at this time. At this time, we will call the agencies forward. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Joanna Clyborn. I'm the Commissioner of Minute Services and the State Chief Information Officer. I come to the Office of Commissioner with a background in organizational management and multidimensional leadership. I'm an attorney by training. I'm a small business owner and a partner in my own law firm. Additionally, I have over 28 years of military service to our great country and state. I currently serve as a Brigadier General in the Minnesota Army National Guard. I am a combat veteran of the Operation Iraqi Freedom and have deployed with the storied 34th Infantry Red Bull Division. While I do not have experience coding or running servers directly, I do have experience in leadership positions in high-pressure environments and overseeing technology and cybersecurity operations in the military arena. I have experience in managing diverse teams as they work to untangle and resolve complex, ill-defined problems. When Governor Dayton asked me to take this position, he gave me four directives: fix MNLARS, deliver real ID, improve our state's cybersecurity posture, and ensure that Minute is providing its premier centralized IT services to our state agency business partners as directed by the legislature. Which brings me to what we have before us today. Our work to improve and complete the MNLARS system. My commitment to you is this. You will receive from me an unvarnished assessment on how I see the situation. As probably Representative Howe, who I served in Iraq with, could probably attest, I take a no-nonsense approach to things. I don't sugarcoat. I will be accountable to each and every one of you to deliver the answers that you seek and to arm you with the information that is needed to make informed decisions. I will honor my commitments to you and to inform you when the situation on the ground changes. Both Commissioner Doman and I share that commitment. And whether that information is for the better or worse, so be it. I regret that my first appearance before you and in this committee is to relay this request. But the urgent reality is the situation demands that Minute and DPS have to request $10 million to be appropriated this week, which we're asking to come from the existing DPS special revenue funds for use on completing and improving the MNLARS build-out. Ms. Dana Bailey, Minute's Executive Director of Projects and Initiatives, will provide more detail on the funding requests later in the hearing. But I want to make it very clear that if no action is taken this week to make these funds available, we have to provide contractually obligated notices to IT contractors who are working to improve the vehicle system in order to ensure we will meet our financial commitments for real ID. Let me be clear. I will not fail to deliver real ID when it is supposed to be delivered, as promised. Without the required funding, it will have a crippling effect on the progress that we are making. If I have to ramp down, even for a short period of time, it will have a snowball effect on my ability to ramp back up in a timely and productive manner. It will affect my ability to retain those with expertise needed to make the system work. And it will essentially leave the system at a status quo for a time being. You asked for an update on the MNLARS. MNLARS currently handles title transactions and vehicle registration and financial transactions. And it administers more than 1,500 different fees for the state of Minnesota. Roughly 18,000 of these vehicle registration transactions are being successfully processed through MNLARS at a daily basis. In total, the system has processed nearly 4.5 million transactions and has collected over $90 million in revenue for the state since its launch in July 2017. Thanks to the very hard work of the DPS staff, the title backlog has been reduced from roughly a high of 380,000 to approximately 210,000 today. We have transitioned over 5,000 system users to MNLARS, including DVS staff, deputy registrars, dealers, and law enforcement who are now using the system every day. Law enforcement now has up-to-date information on vehicles on the road, as deputy registrars are providing a huge service by updating records in real time. This process used to take 2 to 3 months. All that work has been done at DVS. In launching MNLARS, we have converted more than 6 million motor vehicle titles and registration records from the maintenance to MNLARS without interruption to the driver services functions that continue to operate off of the legacy system. These numbers, they are encouraging, but they obscure a more complicated reality behind the scenes. Deputy registrars continue to struggle with time-consuming workarounds and set attractions, transaction types that simply cannot be accommodated by the system at this time. They also deal with the frustration of the public, of auto dealers and other stakeholders. They are in the day-to-day trenches, and I acknowledge that. They are having to be held accountable for system limitations over which they have no control. Ms. Bailey has been traveling throughout the state to hear stakeholders and provide regular updates on the status of our progress. The Minute team, led by Ms. Joan Redwing since late November, has been delivering fixes, features, and improvement at a steady clip with significantly better quality than what was released previously. In total, 101 features and fixes have been implemented in 5 releases since November 8, 2017. I have made it clear that testing standards must and will be maintained at an extremely high level. Fixing one problem while creating 3 others is a situation I find completely unacceptable. Ms. Redwing has implemented what are known as business-driven end-to-end user acceptance testing, with complete transaction coverage before and after the releases. With the exception of one 15-minute unplanned maintenance window, the system has been stable, and response times have greatly improved compared to the time of rollout. But while the fixes and features are being delivered consistently, we realize that they are not being delivered at the pace that users and stakeholders would like to see. There is no doubt that there were failings on this project. In my limited time in this role, it is obvious to me that lapses in oversight, testing, quality assurance, and project management all played a part in rolling out a system that was not ready to go live. I can assure you that I will do everything in my power as commissioner to get to the bottom of what went wrong, to ensure people are held accountable, lessons are learned, and processes are changed. As I meet with my team and I get up to speed on the multitude of aging IT systems that we use on a daily basis to get our work done, it is clear to me that modernization projects of this size and scope will be going on for many years ahead of the state. Not only do we need to make the situation right, we need to learn and change how we do our work to ensure these mistakes are not repeated in the future. Accountability, responsibility, and process are key to this. That said, it is also critical that we not place a focus on what went wrong to paralyze us in the face of the ongoing challenges. We know that we need to fix and complete the MNLARS system. We have released a roadmap and a plan to do just that. We stand before you today to acknowledge the challenges we have faced, but also have prepared to have a tough conversation about what we need to do to fix it. We don't simply want to continue to admire the problem. We come here today prepared with solutions. The MNLARS roadmap is not just based on analysis of new IT leadership, but the recommendations of Microsoft Premier Support Services and the input of deputy registrars, auto dealers, and other system stakeholders. My team and the team from DPS will address the questions you need answered in committing additional dollars to the MNLARS project. ultimately having faith that any project or process, or organization for that matter, comes down not just to having faith in the individuals involved, which I do in the current leadership team that we have, but also to ask the hard questions, even when we may not like the answers. I've been asking hard questions. I don't always like the answers. But I am able to track gains in progress and where we need to work. It is my responsibility to ensure that the trust in my organization, in our organizations, is restored with not just you, but the citizens of Minnesota. I believe the results that we've seen over the last few months should provide the confidence that while much work remains, we are on the right path. We cannot, however, take our foot off the gas. Again, I thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I am happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you. I would just assume that we go through all of the administration testimony before we take any more questions at this point in time. So whoever would like to go next, please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mona Doman, and I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. I'll be a bit more brief. Commissioner Clyburn and I have been working side by side since she came on board, and we share the same commitment to you, but I did want to just make a few statements as well. And I appreciate the opportunity for our agencies to be before you today, and we look forward to working with you as we move towards a fix to this system. I am committed to communicating with you about the work we are doing at the Department of Public Safety and the work that we are doing with MNLARS to fix and improve MNLARS. We will continue to share the truth with you, whether it's good, bad, or anywhere in between. If situations change, however, or if we learn new information after we've reported to you, I commit that I or a member of our team will update you. Commissioner Clyburn and I share this commitment. You and the governor deserve the facts and to have your questions answered so that you can make informed decisions. As I have said publicly and privately, I apologize for the inconvenience that some of our customers have experienced and the challenges that the deputy registrars and other stakeholders have faced. Minnesotans deserve better. That's why MNLARS needs to be fixed. We have a plan and a new team working on the system. I look forward to continuing our work with MNLARS under the leadership of Commissioner Clyburn and Director Bailey on this project and with you to correct the problems, improve the user experience, and deliver the best service that we can to Minnesotans. I believe that we are on the right path with the right solution. We've demonstrated that progress by implementing about 100 features and fixes to the system in the last 3 months. While MNLARS is being fixed, DPS staff have found ways to make things work the best way that they can. They found workarounds and process solutions so Minnesotans could drive legally and obtain titles. These are not ideal solutions, but they are necessary for now. Our employees have worked mandatory and voluntary overtime since December to reduce the title backlog. You've heard about that today already. And we've reduced those numbers greatly. We know that more than 5,000 titles are printed and mailed each day. More than 1 million titles and more than 3.5 million registration renewals have been processed in MNLARS since July, thanks to the work of deputy registrars and our staff. Transitioning to this new computer system from an antiquated 30-year-old mainframe was essential. This transition hasn't been easy for our customers, deputy registrars, auto dealers, and other stakeholders. The system needs to be fixed and fully functional as soon as possible. As I said in the beginning, you have my word that you will hear the truth from me, from us, and the most accurate information that we have. You also have my commitment and the commitment of our team to do better for Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dana Bailey, and I'm the Executive Director of Projects and Initiatives for MNLARS Services. I was brought on to work with the commissioners and their teams, our team, on fixing MNLARS and making sure that RealID is implemented by October 1st, the new fast driver system. Starting with MNLARS leadership changes, the governor has made certain that Commissioner Clyburn's
number one priority is to make sure we fix MNLARS as quickly as possible so stakeholders and the rest of Minnesota are served by this core function of government instead of being hamstrung by defects and lack of functionality. In her short time here, the leadership and guidance she has provided to the MNLARS team has been invaluable, and we are thrilled to have her in our corner. In addition, Joan Redwing, the state's chief enterprise architect, was asked to come on to the project in November full-time to focus her expertise on restructuring the MNLARS IT team to work more efficiently and effectively to identify all system defects and work closely with internal and external stakeholders on prioritizing functionality needed in the system in order for them to run their business and serve their customers. Thanks to Joan and her team, as the commissioners mentioned, 101 features and fixes have been released since November 2018. And while we have heard that a lot of these fixes didn't provide immediate relief to our stakeholders, these releases went a long way to stabilize the system. And I have heard directly from many stakeholders that the system has gotten better since the launch in July. Last week in Duluth with deputy registrars and auto dealers, they reported being hopeful about MNLARS and seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. It's also important to mention the transactions the system has processed since its launch in July. More than 4 million Minnesotans have received their plates and stickers through MNLARS, and since the system launched, more than 775,000 Minnesotans have received their titles. Backlog is now down by 50% since December 1st, and DPS processes an average of 5,300 titles a day. I came on board shortly after Joan to work with Minute and DPS and all external stakeholders to improve outreach, governance, and communications, and additional guidance on what we needed to do to make this right for Minnesota. This meant traveling 1,600 miles to talk with stakeholders about all the problems they experienced, capturing those on the overall list of defects and understanding what they needed in functionality with the system in order to do their jobs. This work didn't stop with statewide meetings. It also meant working with an executive steering committee, which Mark mentioned earlier in his testimony, made of deputy registrars, auto dealers, insurance agents, auctioneers, to rank 32 high-priority fixes and gaps in functionality with the goal of eliminating time-consuming workarounds and building in new features that are targeted for completion in late summer of 2018 on the roadmap. The majority of stakeholders' most sought-after features will be delivered in 6 to 8 months if we are able to receive the full funding to fix the system. The unfortunate factor with all of this work that I just mentioned is with the path forward, which we have great confidence and optimism about, is that it does not come without additional cost. As I stated on January 31st, an additional investment of $43 million is not an easy number, but it's a necessary one. The $43 million will allow us to keep contractors on the team that have been an integral part of the process mentioned above and bring on additional IT contracts to fill gaps in system architectural oversight, development, project management, quality assurance, and user interface. This funding will also allow us to invest additional resources in the DVS Public Information Center to be more responsive to Minnesotans, as well as bring on temporary trainers as they gear up to launch the fast driver system in October. Right now, we are at a pivotal moment with that funding as we reach a point this Thursday where we must notify our existing contractors that we no longer have the funds to continue our work to improve MNLARS. This is why we've asked the legislature for immediate authority to use the $10 million of existing funds in order to continue our work and build the functionality into a system that stakeholders and Minnesotans desperately need. The $10 million not only allows us to keep our current resources on the project, it provides the investment in the additional talent I mentioned above in both IT contracts and staff for the Public Information Center at DVS. The consequences to not receiving this funding are stark. Soon after we've given notification to contractors, we will lose their talent and their years of institutional knowledge on the MNLARS system. Ramp down of work will begin immediately after March 1st, and since these contractors are in a high-demand industry, they are not likely to stay long on the project. We will suspend all but 6 contracts, causing severe delays in the delivery of ongoing upgrades, and the roadmap timeline extends by 6 to 9 months, contingent upon when additional funding is received. Ultimately, the skeleton crew remaining will only be able to keep the system running and will not be able to deliver new features, putting all fixes, including legislatively mandated system fixes, on hold. This includes the ability for deputy registrars to print duplicate titles on site, which is due in August of 2018. Finally, I need to mention that Real ID implementation is right around the corner. Even though FAST will deliver the new driver system on time, all the training and implementation will come at a time when DVS and deputy registrars have to continue their work on a half-built motor vehicle system. Working out of the status quo on MNLARS while training on a new system will be untenable. I know you all care deeply about providing relief to Minnesotans where MNLARS is concerned, and I implore all of you to act this week to provide us with the authority to use this funding. I want to apologize again to the stakeholders and the rest of Minnesota for rolling out this system that has, to put it simply, been incomplete and rife with defects. This is not what anyone wanted, and it's certainly not what Minnesotans deserve. We can and we must do better for them and for all of you. Thank you for your time, diligence, and consideration today. I and my colleagues are glad to respond to any questions.
Thank you, Executive Director. Members, we have a limited amount of time available. We're not going to be able to get every detailed question answered during this hearing, but it seems that the issue before us is this need for immediate funding. As late as January 4th, the Senate had a hearing, which I attended, with the testimony from various members of the administration, and there was no indication on January 4th that there was going to be any need for additional funds. It's really challenging for me, and I think the rest of the members of this committee, to understand how we got into so much financial trouble so quickly. Who can answer that question?
I think that there are a number of issues lending to the fact that we do need additional funding. First of all, it is just the reality of the system that it still needs work. As I stated, it is half-built. And unfortunately, IT contracts come at a cost, and IT talent in state government and in the private sector is unfortunately not free. And so I think it is safe to say that everybody always assumed that there would be an additional cost. It did take us time to realize what that additional cost would be, and it started with realizing in the system where all the defects were, what additional functionality was missing, and what still needed to be built. And so work was going on simultaneously with Joan and her team and with me and the work that I was doing with stakeholders to understand exactly what was missing, what gaps in functionality, what defects needed to be fixed. And along with that, before Joan and I came on, we knew that we were not going to be able to build driver into the MNLARS system in order to deliver Real ID on time on October 1st of 2018. And so, and we're glad that this happened because, as we've stated before, we'd much rather buy a finished product off the shelf than have to build. We did an emergency contract with FAST in order to have them come in and do driver system. They had successfully implemented their driver system in other states, and we have great confidence in their ability to do it here. And unfortunately, that drained resources too. And so with all of that work going on with the FAST driver contract and understanding all of the things that needed to be fixed in MNLARS, and scrubbing that number. This is a really hard number for us, too. It has been a hard conversation to have all around. It's been hard to have with the governor. It's been hard to have with the commissioners. It's been hard to have with the stakeholders, for me personally, and it's very difficult to sit up here and talk with all of you about it. But it is the reality of where we are today. I think we're all on the same page that we need to move forward and fix this. I think, as the commissioner stated, we will be as transparent with you as you need us to be. This immediate ability and authority to use this $10 million is an urgent request. It is a lot to ask of the legislature, and it is where we are today.
Thank you for that. Just two comments, and we're going to move on to questions. One, you have stated that we have invested $100 million to get a half-built system. Unbelievable. Second, it's apparent to me that the department signed a contract with FAST and did not have the resources available to pay the bill. This is unconscionable.
May I respond
Nash,
to that, Mr.
No,
Chair?
No, thank you.
Okay.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to sit in. And I have said this in every one of these hearings where I've been a guest. Nobody ever forgets a bad implementation. And working in IT, I can tell you, it's going to be painful for a long time. But I have a question for you, and maybe Ms. Davidson can come back up as we're asking this question. We were told just a minute ago that after the latest release, there has been only one 15-minute outage, I believe. And General Clyburn, I believe you said that, or Commissioner Chuck, sorry. I'll get over that. But I have heard from other deputy registrars that there have been longer outages, some going up to the course of a business day. And if we're going to have an open and frank conversation and you're going to tell us that you're always going to tell us the truth, that seems incongruous with what you tell us from the one 15-minute outage to other deputy registrars telling me they've lost complete business days. And I'll finish, and then we'll go there. But if we're going to have a frank conversation and be honest partners with one another, please don't tell us one thing when the other is being told to us from the ground. So if we could get the deputy registrar to tell us if there have been other outages or one of the registrars. Okay. So, and, Mr. Chair.
Well, let's allow them to comment on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, I will bring Joan Redwing up here, but what I have learned in the short period of time is sometimes when an outage occurs, so for example, I learned of an outage just a week ago that was being blamed on MNLARS because the driver system in the state could not talk to the federal system, the checks it needs to do in order to assure that the individual requesting their driver's license has basically got no outstanding warrants, no child support issues, they're authorized to have a driver's license, was not communicating. That was operating under not MNLARS, but the old legacy system of the vehicle driver's licensing piece, not the vehicle registration piece. But it was being reported as being a MNLARS issue. When we ran that down, that was not the case. But what I did learn from that, however, is that some of the processes that when a system goes down to send out an all-alert blast of what is going on was not working. So week one on the job, I learned how to manage crisis in regards to communicating out with our deputy registrars. I do have Ms. Redwing here who can talk about what was the 15-minute and the differences between what I'm hearing from the deputy registrar and what we have in our data.
Yep, and actually...
excuse me. Please identify yourself for the record.
Yes. Mr. Chair and members, I'm Joan Redwing, Chief Enterprise Architect for the state, and actually Commissioner Clyburn summarized that very well, so already on the job she doesn't need me, but...
I wouldn't say that.
But I do want to state that our 15-minute outage that we had on February 13th was preceded by about 8 minutes of slowdown, a periodic slowdown with the system. And so we had spikes and slowdowns, and then we did an unscheduled maintenance operation from 5 to 5:15 p.m. where we took the system down, put the splash page up, which is a page saying the system is temporarily unavailable, and we had to enlarge a data store that stored all the images, kind of like if your phone has too many photos on it and you got to clear off some of the photos on your smartphone. It was definitely the same thing, and it was an image file system that manages our title images. Some of our users have been very excited about putting a lot of title images in, and we've done record numbers of titles processed through the system, and that store overran. We tried to issue on-demand additional space, and we were unable to do so, so we had to take the system down for 15 minutes. But Commissioner Clyburn is 100% right that other outages on the legacy systems have been attributed to MNLARS when, in essence, they're unconnected.
Thank
for
you.
The most part.
A follow-up, Representative Nash.
And, Mr. Chair, and perhaps Commissioner Clyburn, when we meet in my office coming up, we can go through some of the, about the 13 or 14 other questions I have. But here's my last question. In Mr. Lee's testimony earlier in the day, and in a question that I had that has yet gone unanswered, over the last number of years, you've roughly spent, we'll say, $10 million a year to get us this now half-built system. You're asking for $43 million to be given to you to spend in the next 18 to 24 months or less. And I asked about your burn rate, and I still haven't gotten an answer about the burn rate, but how mechanically, how physically can you spend $43 million in that short of a period of time? And in the interest of brevity, Mr. Chair, unless you want to indulge the answer on that, maybe we can get that offline, but I, from an IT guy's perspective, and Joan Redwing and I have occasional nerd moments that nobody else here wants to participate in, but how do you spend that much money in that short a period of time, given your burn rate over history?
A very quick answer.
Representative, Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, I will get you a written response to your request that outlines exactly where we're going. Microsoft Premier Services Support has validated the roadmap and the cost that we are projecting. It includes additional funding needed in order to ensure that when the phone rings, that we have people answering the phone to help the deputy registrars resolve some of their customer complaints and issues. So for the need of brevity, I will ensure that that gets responded back to you in writing to the committee.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to say it's encouraging after all these problems to see three new faces in charge at the upper levels. I'm wondering, do we still have most of the same people at the lower levels that are doing most of the work, or do we have new blood in there looking at it from a different perspective that might actually see some problems that the people who wrote it wouldn't notice?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we do have new blood, and I am continuing to ask hard questions to investigate, ask what went wrong, and who is involved. But right now, looking at the org chart of who is doing what and who is there now, there is a difference.
Representative, follow-up, Representative Rarick?
One other. We're being asked to put a lot more money into this system. You made a statement, you will hold people accountable. I would like to know what you mean by that. How will people be held accountable if this does not work?
Mr. Clayborn.
Mr. Chair, Representative, first off, I do believe in due process. And as you know, we have certain data privacy laws that are in effect that prevent me from giving full information until I have everything back. I have requested audits. I have requested investigations. I have learned a long time ago that when you take over an organization that has challenges, the first thing you do is you get to the ground truth, the good, the bad, the ugly, because I can't fix it if I don't know. And so I'm in that process of asking, what have we done for due diligence? Who did what? When did it occur? Why have we spent money? Those are the things, the basic accountability and leadership. So I am in that process. I cannot, however, talk about who or what I'm doing until I get reports back. Once those are actioned and there are findings, if there are findings, keeping with the process of we have all due rights, those are will be then available for disclosure under the data privacy rules. I have made a commitment that everything I have that I am legally able to share, I will share.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the agencies, thank you for being here. Commissioner Clayborn, nice to meet you. I'm looking forward to working with you as well to try to help work this situation a lot better than your predecessor. What frustrates me about some of your earlier concerns, and I will tell you, your leadership speech is inspiring to me. And I think you have leadership skills to do this. My concern would be straight up front, if you want to be honest with each other, is you don't know code, nor do I. Now, your predecessor did, and it didn't work out so well. What I'm concerned about is you kind of want to look forward, and I get all that. The team that is assembled here is better, I think, than what it was. And I still think there's some divisions within the ranks of both agencies that are falling far short. I hear stories from certain dealer divisions that are just not getting communicated to, except now recently they have been getting some information, which is finally 7 months later, they're getting some information. That is encouraging. My concern is when you go back, how can we assure, with you not knowing, like me, how to run a system, how will you not make the same mistakes that was happening before today so that we as legislators and the holders of the money can trust the new leadership team, can trust that your soldiers are actually reporting to you the way they should have been reporting to the earlier commissioner? That wasn't happening. There's a lot of members below you that we still have a lot of issues with. And I'm struggling with that line of mid-managers that are giving you honest answers, and I hope that you can convince us that that will be addressed as well, because that has been, I think, a major problem in the whole system for the last 3-4 years has been people inside have not been doing a good job with their honest approach to their leadership. I hope you can make that change. Maybe you have some thoughts on that.
Commissioner Clyburn.
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, I think what you're asking me to answer is how will I change the culture within Minute, even though I do not know how to physically code, although I did take some coding a couple of many years ago. It's definitely not my forte. You know, the truth of the matter is, as leaders and as senior leaders, especially those sitting in the room, we are often asked to take on things in which we are not necessarily the individual subject matter expert. We trust our teams, but we verify. We create open doors of communication, and we hold people responsible that block the open doors for communication. If we want to use a military analogy, it's like the Inspector General. You don't stop people from making complaints. So I know that I'm only on day 13 or 14 right now, but here's some of the things that I've done. First off, I've made it clear to my senior leadership team and to my chief business technology officers that I expect frank and open dialogue. I expect us to disagree with each other, but at the end of the day, I am the one who's responsible and accountable for the actions that we take in this organization. I expect an ability to communicate from this lowest level within my organization. We're working on a process that would allow feedback, potentially anonymously, because no one wants to worry about whether there'll be any repercussions, on how they can provide that feedback to them. I have started implementing the not just who needs to know, but who should know about that information, which includes communicating with commissioners across the board, as well as the legislative members as well. I am willing to underwrite, and my leadership style for the last 28 years is that I am willing to underwrite honest mistakes. I do not kill the messenger. That's how we learn and grow. I do not, however, underwrite failings of moral or ethical responsibility. That we have no room for within the state that we serve. So that culture is already changing. I may not be able to code the X's and the ones and the zeros, but I understand people, and I understand how they ask the hard questions, and sometimes even as simple as asking the why makes the difference. We don't take things at face value, just as this body is not taking at face value the actions that I'm doing. It's more than promises. It's more than faith. It's progress. It's results. That's part of that process, Representative.
Follow up, Representative Baker. Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Clyburn, welcome on board. Good to work with you again, I hope. I do have a question, and I've got some concerns about the mission the governor gave you, the mission to fix MNLARS. And I'm concerned that that may have precluded a course of action analysis on the road that we're currently going down to see if that actually is going to provide the best product and the best service long-term for the state of Minnesota and its citizens. And so I'm concerned that you have been tasked to do a job that may not be in the best interest of the state to fix MNLARS, or did you do a course of analysis, course of action analysis to see if this is the best road? Is there alternatives that, although may cost us a little extra, may provide us a more complete, compatible system in the future?
Commissioner Clyburn.
Mr. Chair, Representative Howe, I hope you know me better than that by now.
got to ask the question.
Yes, I've done a course of action analysis. My first question when I walked in is, why? Why are we doing this? What are our options? What have we done? What's our due diligence? And then I started having some informal conversations to see where we are. The reality is even though the governor gave me the task to fix Minlar, he did not tell me how to fix the system. He did not tell me to give him a sugar-coated version of what I think about the system. And so looking at the other options available out there, here's what I know. It would basically stop progress in the system that we have now. It would continue to create unreasonable delays for the deputy registrars and other stakeholders. Cost analysis out there has not been done because I can't ask anyone about bids without violating contracting rules. But the reality is that it would require us to near shut down Minlars or ask for, please, we have to continue to stabilize the system so there's something to be used in the interim. In addition to then starting the competitive bid process, which previously we had done that process and was not a viable option. Additionally, at this point, I think the best use of taxpayer money is to deliver the product that needs to be delivered with the maximum functionability that the users need at the most responsible cost available. And that includes not just the contract of bringing someone in, but then how do I reduce the contractors that I have on staff now so that I don't have to continue to rely on those resources. So we do actually have an analysis on that, and at this time, I'm open to ideas. I do not find that an alternate course of action is a reasonable approach for the state, not for the governor, not for me, but for the citizens of Minnesota as a good financial steward of our resources.
Follow-up, Representative Howell.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Commissioner Clyburn, and this probably happened, I believe this happened before your time, so when we entered into a contract with FAST on the driver's license piece, how was that done without the RFP proposal, and how did that not violate contract? And why would we not be able to do something similar with the registration piece?
Commissioner Clyburn.
Mr. Chair, Representative Howell. That contract was done under emergency authorization. I don't have all the timelines perfectly memorized, but because of the executive order not to move forward and then the legislature providing an order to move forward, there was a shortened amount of time in which we could facilitate getting the real ID compliance going, which included the federal deadline of October 1st and meeting that timeline. As you were probably well aware, we did not receive that extension of time, and so we had to move fast, or else citizens of Minnesota would not potentially be able to board planes or get on ships without the appropriate real enhanced IDs that they needed to do that. That contract was let under the emergency authorizations. At this point, I don't know that we would be under an emergency authorization when it came to a contract for Minlars, given the resources and the ability to complete the project within minute now.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Clyburn, thank you for your testimony and your leadership, and welcome aboard. What can you tell us about the activities and leadership that you've taken with the project? Specifically, I'm wondering how many employees or contracting professionals are involved in the scope of the project, how many people or contractors have been fired or reassigned due to your leadership activity in correcting these failures that are represented in this half-built system.
Commissioner Clyburn.
Mr. Chair, Representative Tarkowski, right now I have one audit request specifically to this, one investigation specifically to this. Contractor-wise, we have some individuals I did not have to take action on because they are no longer in the ploy, either as state employees or as contractors within our organization. The exact number of contractors I can provide to you, if that is something I need to pull the number to make sure I'm accurately quoting that back to you. I have not had to terminate myself any contracts itself at this point based on concerns of performance. I think based on the change in leadership and the structures under Ms. Red Wing, a lot of the supervisory issues that were present of contractors have now been rectified. I'm not entirely comfortable yet with that full assessment, but I am still working on that to fully understand the implications of every person involved within this process.
Follow-up, Representative Jaskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, it seems like you talked about the contractors. How about state employees?
Commissioner Clyburn.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jaskowski, as I stated, I have issues with Data Privacy Law Act issues. I have an active investigation right now. I am my apologies for mispronouncing your name.
Well, Commissioner, I'm just asking for numbers. Just give us a number. We don't need any entities here.
One active investigation of an employee right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Executive Director Bailey, I apologize. I cut you off earlier. That was not appropriate. And I want to give you an opportunity to address the issue that was at hand, and that was the issue of the contract with FAST.
Mr. Chair and members, you stated that we went into the contract with FAST not having enough money, and that's just, it's not true. I think we entered into that contract with FAST knowing we had just enough money. What we did not factor in, and this is unfortunate, is what was going on with MNLARS at the time and all of the problems that the system was having and the additional cost at the end of the day that we would have to incur in order to improve and build additional functionality into the MNLARS system. But the money was there for the FAST contract.
Well, thank you for that. So were additional MNLARS employees hired in the, during that same time period that caused you to burn through, to borrow Representative Nash terminology, to burn through more funds in an anticipated manner?
Mr. Chair and members, my understanding is that the teams actually, before we entered into the FAST contract, the teams were split, and I may be misrepresenting. I wasn't here at the time, and maybe Commissioner Dillman knows a little bit more. But the team split to work on MNLARS, which is motor vehicle, and then driver. And so we had to split resources up. I think Joan can actually speak more to yep. the teams and what happened to all of the people working on the MNLARS system.
Thank you for that. Before we go to Ms. Redwing, I'd like to hear from the commissioner. Commissioner Dolman, this is all under, well, it's not all under your purview, but certainly much of it is. Do you have any remarks to make in regard to this contract?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me, Mr. Chair and members. My understanding in working with MMB and Minute and our staff is that when we entered into this contract, exactly like Director Bailey said, we did have the money to pay for the contract. At the same time, we were assessing what was going on with the MNLARS project and realizing that there was going to be a need for more resources for the MNLARS contract as well. In regards to the emergency authorization, as we realized that MNLARS was in a situation that it was, we knew that we were not going to be able to meet the deadline of October 1st with Minute building the driver's side and Minute building MNLARS and fixing MNLARS. And so that's the response that I would have to the emergency authorization.
Ms. Redwing?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. When I came in, the team was split in two. It was a driver's side and the vehicle side. And when we were analyzing the kind of 11 streams of feedback and issues defects, gaps, and we're reconciling all of that. We saw that there was a sufficient amount of work, more than was expected, and we let 8 people go, contractors go, as we merged the teams together. And then we wanted to retain the largest team possible of the combined team because we saw that there was so much work left on Minlars. That at that point, we started to put together the roadmap for how we could address these issues, how many people we would need, and do a deep dive budget analysis on what remaining funds we had and really understand our commitment. Then Dana Bailey came in, started working with our deputy registrars and our dealers and other stakeholders, and were able to assess even more what kind of was lurking beneath the iceberg of things that we needed to fix on the system, and what our priorities were. And we then matched the team size with our priorities. And since then, since January 1st and through January 31st when we released the roadmap, we also did publish that we would have a hard ramp down on March 1st if we did not get successive funds. And I've had a 27% drop in the size of the team since then because IT people are in such demand. If they know that we're up against a hard ramp down, they will leave the team. Because there's just so many jobs out there and not enough people in .NET resources and technical resources. So our team has shrunk since then.
I certainly understand the challenge of threatened funding that happens around here. But I still, we aren't going to be able to answer this anymore any further today. I would hope that as Mr. Lee inquires for more financial information in regard to these transactions, that you are forthright and quick in your responses. I think this is a critical question as we try to address this question of the shortfall or the current request for $10 million. At this point, I think someone needs to go to the governor and tell him to go to the speaker and work this out. Frankly, this, I feel, because of the circumstances involved here, I feel it's above my pay grade to cough up $10 million. I don't have it in my pocket, and I'm uncomfortable with the current situation. Until the governor and the speaker reach an agreement as to how we're going to address this, I have no intention of moving anything forward. With that, members, we are past our time, and I will adjourn this meeting.